Friendship According to Humphrey, Chapter 14, Oh No, More Snow. It was eerie to hear the bell ring for morning break, lunch and afternoon break, when there was no one at school except Og and me. Staring out at all that snow gave me a chill. The temperature was dropping inside as well. What was it that Aldo had said about turning down the heat at night to save money? I felt even chillier as I realised there was no one around to turn the heat up again. Luckily, I had my fur coat, my sleeping house, and a nice pile of wood shavings I could crawl into to keep warm. I wondered how Og was doing with nothing more than four glass walls, some greenery, and an unheated swimming pool. I dozed for much of the day and nibbled on my stash of food I kept hidden in my sleeping nest. We hamsters are clever about saving up food in case of emergency. But my food dish was empty and my water was getting low. Between naps, I gazed out of the window. There were still no cars on the street. In fact, I couldn't tell where the street ended and the pavement began. Everything was a solid sheet of white. Og was quiet most of the time, and the crickets were silent too. I was bored, 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 all alone in the classroom. I even missed maths class. Finally, I hopped onto my wheel for some lively exercise. That warmed me up, but it also made me hungry. When I checked my stash of food, the only thing left was a limp tomato stalk. The bell signalling the end of school finally rang. I wondered what my classmates were doing. AJ was probably watching TV with his family. Garth and Andy would be playing video games. I figured Miranda was cuddling up with Clem. Didn't his bad breath bother her? Saya was in no doubt helping her mum care for her younger brother, and Mrs. Brisbane was probably bustling around her warm, toasty kitchen while Mr. Brisbane built a bird box. They were all warm, all cosy, and all well fed. They were definitely not worrying about me or Og. I wasn't helping myself thinking of these things. I decided to work on my poem. What rhymes with gloom? Doom. I slipped my notebook and pencil out of their hiding place behind my mirror and burrowed down into my pile of wood shavings to keep warm. I promptly fell asleep. It was night time when I woke up. Hey, Og, do you think Aldo will come tonight? I asked my neighbour. Og didn't answer. Aldo didn't come. The snow kept falling. Around midnight, I heard a funny whirring sound and looked out of the window. A huge machine, much bigger than a car, crept down the street like a giant yellow snail with an orange light spinning around on top. It rolled along slowly, then disappeared. 3 hours later, it returned from the opposite direction and disappeared again. Did you see that, Og? I squeaked loudly. He was definitely ignoring me. I didn't blame him. I'd said terrible things to him, things he probably understood. Guilt made me feel even colder. Og, I didn't mean it when I said I didn't care if you were my friend. I called out from my cage. I'll forgive you for splashing me, if you'll forgive me for saying those things, okay? Boing. I think he meant okay, but there was something odd about the way Og sounded. Maybe he was hungry, like me. Then I recalled that he didn't need to eat as often as I do. Frogs have all the luck. The next morning, the snow stopped falling, but the ground was covered and there were still no cars or people to be seen, except for that parked snowball, car. Even if it hadn't snowed, nobody would have come to school because it was Saturday. 1 week ago today, I was starring in Magic Mitch's show. Now I was alone, almost, cold, 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 hungry and forgotten. All my life, some human had brought me food and water and cleaned my cage. I'd been well cared for. I'd never had to fend for myself, but I was a clever and capable hamster. It was time for me to take care of myself like my wild hamster ancestors, the ones who lived in the forests with piles of leaves and pine cones and all the fruits and nuts they could collect. Hunger must have clouded my brain, because it hadn't occurred to me until that moment that all my hamster food was right there on the table. Yummy things like hay, mealworms, grains and vitamin drops. All I had to do was help myself. I opened the lock that doesn't lock and stumbled out of my cage. Og, are you okay? I called out. Boing, he said weakly. It had been a while since he'd eaten too. And I remembered Mrs. Brisbane talking about how important it was for frogs to have fresh water. I'm going to get some food, I explained. Maybe I can find some mealworms for you. I don't think I can get into the cricket cabinet. Lucky for the crickets. Boing. Hog sound even weaker this time. And he didn't look as green as usual for a frog. That's not good. I rushed across the top of the table, slightly faint from hunger. And there they were. A great big bag of Nutri-Nibbles. A taller bag of hamster hay and a giant jar of mighty mealworms. Yum. Of course, getting from the table top, from the table to the top of those containers was a big problem for a small hamster. If I climbed up the bag of Nutri-Nibbles, for example, I would be in serious danger of falling into the bag and getting trapped there. Even though I love Nutri-Nibbles, I didn't want to spend my last minutes on Earth being crushed by them. No, the only sensible approach was brute force. I decided to take a run at the bag and knock it over. The treats would tumble out and I could eat to my heart's content. I took a deep breath and ran at the bag, yelling, "Charge!" It didn't quite work out according to my plan. I hit the bag with all my might and it tippled a little. Unfortunately, then the bag tipped back the other way and crashed down on top of me. I wasn't crushed, but I was trapped underneath the bag of treats. There was a little airspace around me and I could see a glimmer of light. I could breathe too. I just couldn't get out. What I could do was yell, "Help! I'm trapped!" I squeaked, although the bag muffled the sound. Not sure why I was yelling, "Help me, please." Probably sound like squeak, squeak, squeak. I squeaked anyway and waited. What was that I heard? Boing, 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 followed by a large crash. I couldn't imagine how Og thought that all that noise would help me. Then I heard a new sound, pop, pop, pop. Soon, Og was grinning at me through the slit of light. That crazy old lump of a frog had managed to hop all the way out of his house and he'd come to save me. He started leaping at the bag, each time hitting it harder and harder. The bag shifted and the space around me started to open up as I crawled towards him. Og kept bashing the bag, screaming, "Squee! Squee!" Oh, this is a whole new Og and a whole new sound. The space got bigger and bigger and I crawled along until I could reach out and grab Og. Although I was weak from hunger and all that effort, I managed to grab onto Og's back just as the bag shifted again, flattening out. I was glad, glad, glad I wasn't underneath it anymore. "Squee!" Og repeated. I pulled myself up onto Og's back and he hopped away from the bag. What a thrill. I was rocking and rolling on his back like a cowboy riding a bucking bronco. "Yee-haw!" I yelled. "Go, Og! Go, frog! Squee!" he yelled. All of a sudden, the lights came on and I heard footsteps. "Oh no, look at that! They're out of their cages." It was Mrs. Brisbane. "They've knocked the food over. They must be starving, poor things." "Smart little critters," said Mr. Morrill, chuckling. "Muy intelligent." I hardly recognised those two, bundled up in heavy coats and woolly hats with huge scarves almost covering their faces. "How did they get out?" Mrs. Brisbane wondered. "Maybe somebody didn't lock Humphrey's cage tightly," said the headmaster. "And I suppose the frog hopped out of his tank. Look, pushed the lid off. So I have a lock that doesn't lock, and Og has a top that he can pop. Never fear, Aldo's here," another voice yelled out. A bundled up Aldo hurried into the room. "Are they okay?" "The snowplough didn't clean our street till half an hour ago. I was going to walk over here, but the radio said it was far too dangerous to go out." "I know," said Mrs. Brisbane. "Bert and I have been worried sick. If I'd known the storm was coming, I would have taken them home with me. And everybody's rung me, all the parents, Angie Loomis, everybody." Mrs. Brisbane put me back into my cage and gave me a handful of Nutri-Nibbles. Mr. Morrill put Og back into his box and fed him some icky crickets. Ooh, gag. Aldo went to get us both fresh water. "It's too cold in here for Og," Mr. Morrill said. He pulled through all right, but I'm going to buy him a heater. More footsteps clomped across the floor. "We came as soon as we got shovelled out," said Miranda, as she, Amy and Abby arrived. "The girls have been worried all day," said Amy. We hadn't been forgotten after all. Heidi's mum, Garth's dad and Saya and her dad turned up too. Every one of them worried about Og and me. I wanted to thank them, but it's not polite to talk with your mouth full. They all asked to take us home for the rest of the weekend, but Mrs. Brisbane was quite firm. I'm going to be selfish this time. I'm taking them home with me. My husband would never forgive me if I didn't. Mr. Morrells told everyone to be very, very, very careful on the drive back home. He and Aldo helped Mrs. Brisbane prepare our houses for the trip. Finally, my tummy felt full. Og, I squeaked. Thank you, my friend. Does this mean you forgive me? Boing, he answered, which was an extremely nice thing for a frog to say. Real friendship is shown in times of trouble. Prosperity is full of friends. Ralph Waldo Emerson, American poet and essayist. Chapter 15, Poetry Festivity. Bert Brisbane was waiting at the door for us. Hurry on in, it's freezing, he said. Mr. Morrells helped Mrs. Brisbane carry in our houses and all the bags of food and bedding. Who knows how long they'll have to stay, he said. Mrs. Brisbane went to make a pot of tea, and soon Mr. Brisbane was cleaning Og's tank. Mr. Morrells may be the most important person at Longfellow School, but the headmaster rolled up his sleeves and cleaned out my cage. He didn't even complain about what was in my potty corner. He did wear gloves and washed his hands afterwards. This is a good lesson for all of us, said Mrs. Brisbane, as she brought in a tray of steaming cups of tea, plate of biscuits and some yummy pieces of broccoli and lettuce for me. If you decide to have a pet, you have to take total responsibility. Mr. Morrells munched on a biscuit. I think they took responsibility for themselves. How on earth did such small creatures knock down that big bag? I was wondering about that too, said Mrs. Brisbane. I think it was teamwork. A frog and a hamster? Never heard of such a thing, said Bert. Really wish I'd been there to see those two. He smiled and shook his head. I always knew that Humphrey was sharp as a needle. But now we know there's a lot going on in Og's head too. Boing, Og croaked, and he lunged at the side of his glass box. Mrs. Brisbane chuckled. He's feeling better. Looks like he wants to play a game of leapfrog. Leapfrog is a game? Had I been wrong about Og since that very first night? Instead of trying to scare me, he wanted to play. Like Mrs. Brisbane, I wasn't sure what went on in Og's head, but he did have some good ideas, like rescuing me. He even had another sound he could make. Nobody knew it but me, and that made me feel kind of special, like a friend. The sun came out that afternoon, and so did the snowploughs. While the gardens were still covered with snow, the streets were clear and the cars travelled freely again. Across the street from the Brisbanes, two children built a snowman. Inside the Brisbane house, I was more than happy to run mazes, play hide-and-seek with Bert for old time's sake. Og watched from his glass house, but said very little. By Monday, the roads had improved enough for everyone to go back to school. Thank goodness, because the poetry festival was coming up on Friday, and there was still a lot of work to do. Some of the students had worked on memorising their poems or writing them out at home over the long weekend. Most didn't. Garth Tugwell had changed poems 3 times. On Monday, he changed again. Mrs. Brisbane sent him to the cloakroom to memorise his new selection. Mrs. Brisbane surprised Kirk by asking for his help. You've been a lot better lately about knowing when to be funny and when to be quiet, she said. Now I need your help. We don't want this poetry festival to be a too serious event. We want it to be fun. Would you introduce the poems for us? Kirk's whole face lit up. Sure. Be sure to make it funny, she told him. By the end of the day on Tuesday, the notice board was covered with illustrated poems, and the students had copied out. Along the edge of the board were cut out pictures of famous poets, from Longfellow to a man named Shakespeare and a lady named Emily Dickinson. Late in the day on Wednesday, my classmates finished their Valentine boxes. What they did with ordinary cardboard was excellent. Some of them were covered with red hearts, glitter and pieces of lace. Others were covered with buttons and lots of paint. Garth's had a big dinosaur on the side. Miranda's letterbox had cut out pictures of her family pasted on. Her mum, dad, Abby, Amy and Ben. And, yes, Clem. Tabitha's letterbox had pictures of basketballs, footballs, soccer balls, all glued across the outside. Then, surprise, Mandy presented Og with a green box with pictures of frogs and insects all over it. And AJ gave me a box covered in golden, furry-looking material. Wasn't real fur, I checked. As nice as it was, I felt sad, 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 because no matter how many Valentines I received, there was no way I could make Valentines for everyone in the class. How could I let them know how much I valued their friendship? I was still feeling low when Aldo arrived on Wednesday night. He was in an unusually good mood. "It's a beautiful evening, gentlemen, and I've got good news to share with you," he announced as he wheeled in his trolley. "I could use some good news, Aldo," I squeaked back. "Boing," added Og. Aldo pulled up his chair next to my cage. Instead of taking out his sandwich, or a treat for me, he pulled out a piece of paper. "Behold, my first mark from college. A test in psychology." I wondered if he was in the same class as Natalie, the babysitter. "My mark, as you can plainly see," Aldo held up the paper to my cage, "is an A. Can you believe it, my friends? 3 cheers for Aldo," I squeaked as I hopped onto my wheel for a joyful spin. "Haven't shown this to Maria yet. I'm saving it for her Valentine's present, along with some flowers, and sweets, of course. I think this mark will be her favourite gift." Aldo leaned back and smiled with satisfaction. Og dived into his pool with a huge splash. I think a little water got on Aldo, but he didn't seem to mind. "Splash away, Og, my friend," Aldo said. "It makes a happy sound." Og splashed because he was happy. All I thought about the splashing was that it was irritating. Aldo was grinning from ear to ear, almost like a frog. "You see before you a happy man. There's nothing better in the world than to have someone to share good news and even bad news with. You see, Maria's my wife, but she's also my best friend." I stopped spinning because I felt a little dizzy. I learned a bit about friendship this year by watching my classmates in room 26. There were friends who got really angry but made up afterwards. There were friends who stuck together through thick and thin. There were friends who reached out to you even when you didn't think you needed a friend. There were friends who would actually rescue you when you were in trouble. There were new friends, old friends, silver and gold friends. Later that night, I was sorry, sorry, sorry I'd ever doubted Og was my friend. I hadn't understood that sometimes a frog feels jealous, sometimes he feels splash happy. But he had come through for me when I needed help. So how do you say thank you to a frog? I decided to write a poem. Not just "the roses are red, frogs are green" poem, but a poem that said what I really felt. I pulled out my notebook and started to write. The next day was spent rehearsing for the poetry festival and straightening up the room. Boy, these kids' tables can get pretty messy. I didn't pay much attention. I was hunkered down in my sleeping house, writing my hamster's heart out. Friday was Valentine's Day and everyone was excited. In the morning, the students posted their Valentine cards in a big box on Mrs. Brisbane's desk. During break, the teacher sorted out the cards and delivered them, humming happily as she dropped them into the boxes. After break, the students opened their cards. There was a lot of giggling and even some crunching, since Mrs. Brisbane had also dropped sugar hearts into all the letterboxes. Out of the blue, AJ shouted, "Hey, hold on." That's got everyone's attention. "I got a card from Marty Bean." Seth groaned loudly. "No, listen, he says he's sorry," AJ explained. "I got one too," said Garth. Miranda and Heidi also got "I'm sorry" cards from Marty. "But he's so mean," Mandy blurted. "People can change," said Mrs. Brisbane. "I think it must have been quite difficult for Marty to write those cards, and he gave them for me to deliver. Maybe it was time to give him a second chance." Phew, giving Mean Bean a second chance wouldn't be easy. Yet we recalled that once he got started, he was actually pretty nice when he handed out prizes at the birthday party. Maybe Aldo's talk with him had done him some good. No wonder he got an A in psychology. "I'll give him a second chance," I exclaimed. "Of course," it came out, squeak, squeak, squeak. "I haven't forgotten you, Humphrey," said Mrs. Brisbane. She came over to help Og and me with our letterboxes. We received cards from all the students in the class. Each one was special. but the one I remember the most was from Miranda. Though hamster doesn't have a rhyme, I love you, Humphrey, all the time. She'd worked out how to write a poem with the word hamster in it, after all. I had one more card in my letterbox, the nog. It was from Brazil, yes. Ms. Mac had remembered me with a teeny card, little card that said, Humphrey, you will always be a special friend. Love, Ms. Mac. She sent a letter to the whole class as well, with greetings from her pupils in Brazil. Wonderful as it was to receive those cards, I kept one eye on the clock all morning, because I had a special mission to accomplish during lunch. A hamster's work is never done. The bell finally rang and the students left, which was good, but Mrs. Brisbane stayed behind, which was bad. She busily rearranged all the chairs into a big half circle. She picked scraps of paper off the floor and straightened a few tables. Wasn't this woman ever going to eat? At last, she glanced up at the clock, picked up her lunch bag, and hurried out of the room. Didn't have much time, so I tore a page out of my notebook, jiggled the lock that doesn't lock, flung open the door, and slid down the leg of the table. Og started boinging in alarm, but I didn't have time to explain. I raced across the floor as fast as my legs would carry me, straight to Mrs. Brisbane's desk. When I got there, I gasped with surprise. My plan was to climb up onto a chair and take a giant leap onto the desk. It was dangerous and risky, but sometimes you have to be bold. However, the teacher had ruined everything by moving her chair far, far, far away from her desk into the circle of other chairs. Even worse, her desk didn't have legs to climb up. It was a solid block of wood. My big plan was completely spoiled. The clock ticked away. My only option was to put the piece of paper on the floor near her desk and scramble back onto the table. I grabbed the cord from the blinds and began to swing back and forth until I got up onto the top of the table. I took the final leap and scurried back to my cage, pulling the door shut behind me. Boing, 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 croaked Og. You'll understand soon, I told him, I hope. After lunch, Mrs. Brisbane returned to the classroom, followed by her other students. The classroom assistants arrived with juice and biscuits. Next, the other parents entered. Everyone was so busy saying hello and admiring the decorations that I lost track of Mrs. Brisbane. I could hear her, though. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to take your seats, we're ready for the poetry festival to begin. She talked about what we'd been studying and all the hard work we'd put in. Then she turned the celebration over to Kirk Chen. Kirk was in good form. He introduced each student with a short poem. The rhymes were funny, but they didn't hurt anybody's feelings. For instance, when it was Heidi's turn, Kirk said, "Here's something fun by Heidi Hopper. When it comes to poems, you can't top her." He introduced Tabitha by saying, "Tabitha's new, but boy, can she rhyme. We hope she stays a long, long time." And for AJ's poem, he said, "AJ's poem makes him proud, but don't be surprised if he speaks real loud." AJ did too. I was proud, proud, proud of my classmates as one by one they stood in front of the room and recited their poems. Heidi recited the frog poem she wrote instead of her smiley poem. Tabitha performed a funny poem about a basketball player named Casey. Sayer recited the dove poem. Pay attention, Art lost his place in his poem, but he started over again and did fine. If anybody forgot a word, Mrs. Brisbane whispered it and nobody seemed to notice. Parents clapped heartily for each and every poem. I did too. Then my heart sank as Mrs. Brisbane said, "That concludes this year's poetry festival. I hope you'll all stay for refreshments." My plan had utterly failed. I glanced over at Og. He was still smiling, but he didn't know what I had planned. But Mrs. Brisbane kept talking. "I have one more poem I'd like to share. I found this scrap of paper on the floor as you arrived. I think it expresses the feelings the children in this room have for each other. It's very tiny and a little hard to read, but I'll try. A friend doesn't have to be a work of art, just have a heart. A friend doesn't need to have fur or hair to care. A friend doesn't have a thing to do but like you. A friend doesn't need to say a word to be heard. It's not so hard to be a friend in the end. The room was silent until Heidi's mum started the applause and everyone joined in. "There's a scratchy kind of scribbling at the bottom. I can't make out the name," said Mrs. Brisbane. "Would the pupil who wrote this like to stand up and identify himself or herself?" I was standing up all right, and I squeaked at the top of my voice, I wrote it, for Og, to my Valentine, to him. "Sounds like Humphrey knows who wrote it," Mr. Golden joked, and everybody laughed, everybody except Og. "Boing, boing," he shouted, hopping up and down. At last, I'd got through to him. And now I knew exactly what he was saying. "You're welcome, Og," I replied. "You're welcome, you grinning, green, lumpy, bumpy, hairless, goggle-eyed, cricket-eating friend. You are entirely welcome." Later that night, I looked over at Og as he dived into his swimming pool with a giant splash. He looked the same as ever, yet everything was different. What had seemed like a sneery leer was really a friendly grin. The splashing that once annoyed me made me feel good because I knew Og was happy, happy, happy. And the lunge that once scared me just meant Og wanted to play a game. Sometimes humans are hard to understand, especially when they act mean like Marty Bean or get crabby like Abby. But with patience and a little psychology, you can usually figure them out. It's the same with frogs and even hamsters. I'd made a few mistakes, but I'd managed to keep my old friends in room 26 and make a new one too. Suddenly my heart went boing as I thought about my shiny silver new friend, my friend Og. "Of what shall a man be proud if he is not proud of his friends?" Robert Louis Stevenson, Scottish novelist and poet.